They came from the farms of a vast heartland, the streets of glowing cities, and the forges of mighty industrial towns. Before the war, many had never ventured beyond their own community. It was here that tens of thousands of the Americans came. The GIs who boarded the landing craft that morning knew that they carried on their shoulders not just the pack of a soldier, but the fate of the world.
All right, some of what President Trump had to say today in Normandy, 75 years since the D-Day invasion. And the stories continue to be able to see the people that were lined up with the president there, still survivors of that day. I'd say a human history turning day. They're still with him. Actually, we even had a story of a 97-year-old that parachuted into where he parachuted on this day back in 1945. As we're talking about the Normandy invasion, think so. Some of the stats: 5,300 or so Allied ships and landing craft, 175,000 men. British and Canadians put 75,000 troops ashore. Americans 57,500. Which I wanted to point out, so some of the stats here. So the American troops that hit the beach on this day in 75 years ago were, if you take the population of Pensacola, okay, every man, woman, and child inside the city limits of Pensacola, that's how many American soldiers, how many troops were lined up there on the beaches in Normandy. About that. So picture all of Pensacola.
Man.
All those people being Americans that are hitting the beach, okay? And then, in addition, last night, 75 years ago, and through the night, the population of about Gulfport, or a little more, went in with parachute and glider as Allied airborne troopers numbered around 20 to 21,000. The U.S. 7th Corps sustained 22,119 casualties from today through the 1st of July. Including 2,811 killed, 13,564 wounded, and 5,665 missing, and 79 captured. American personnel in Britain included 1.9 plus million land troops, 659,000 air troops, and 285,000 naval troops, a total of 2.8 million officers and men that were readied there at Portsmouth and other places, ready to make this invasion and this big push for the liberation of Europe.
Yeah, pointing out the populations of Pensacola and Gulfport, that does quite a bit.
It helps me picture it.
Yeah, it helps me a lot too, but with over 2 million, I can't imagine the scale, just the amount of just humans involved in this war and the terror and chaos on this day 75 years ago. We've seen some movies, some documentaries that help kind of put that into the slightest bit of perspective what it was like on that day for those soldiers, but no one, unless you've served in the heat of battle, no one could possibly know what that was like.
Yeah, I've said it a couple times, said it earlier this morning too. Something that while I grew up studying World War II in school, and then beyond that was interested in it, read on my own and studied and have been a consumer. There's a whole shelf worth of my library in my office at home that's books on World War II, but it wasn't until we were cleaning out the attic of my grandparents' farmhouse, and this is after my grandmother passed, my grandfather had passed before her, that I came upon a box full of Life magazines. I guess they had a subscription. They came, and reading through the accounts as they were written then. You think about it now, whether you're watching a movie, you're watching a documentary, even reading a book, you're doing it with the perspective of those things were all written after the war ended. Mm-hmm. And so even if they try to keep that out of a narrative, if you have a movie, it somehow creeps in at the seams because it was so different to read those accounts of D-Day and other battles. I mean, I went back, I've been reading about the Anzio and reading about the campaign there in Italy, North Africa campaign, and then on through the Pacific. But the accounts there in Life magazine about these battles from D-Day on, D-Day plus one, D-Day plus two, D-Day plus three, on down the line, as they were moving inland, the Allied forces, to read those through the authors back then that were just reporting news. They weren't in a historical setting. They had no idea. You read the Life magazine accounts of the Battle of the Bulge as they're talking about, you know, these troops, those troops, what's going on, without any shadow of knowing that the Allies would be victorious. And it was not a sure thing at all. And there were some points on into the war where you felt like, well, you know, the days are numbered for the Nazis, and that still drug on for years. But they're on today, 75 years ago, had no idea that this would be successful. So to read the news accounts in a magazine of the day and to see how they told the story really, like, took everything I knew and reinforced some of it, shook some of it up. It was, if you ever get a chance, and I'm sure they're online, I'm sure maybe in a PDF form or searchable as Life Magazine, if you'll start in 39 and go on through the years of the war, it was really life-changing for me to read those.
Reading those articles, did you get a sense that kind of like today there was a lot of division? Were there a lot of people saying, mm-hmm. you know, we shouldn't be doing this, shouldn't mm-hmm. be doing that? Or do you think that America was just totally united behind this cause?
I imagine like anything, nothing's monolithic. There right. were probably people that were questioning, but they weren't brought up in those stories. I mean, it wasn't accounted for then. But the nation as a whole, number one, was a different country than we are today. But also, I think if you had today with the divisions and all that, if you had an enemy like we had then, mm-hmm. you would have solidarity that would be, I think you'd be surprised. Because a lot of people have said, you know, think about the, 19-year-olds and 20-year-olds of today being faced with what the 19 and 20-year-olds were faced with in, on June 6th, 75 years ago. And I would say you might be surprised if the scenario was the same, the threat was as great. I think you would see something very similar in the American spirit. They would slough off maybe what we all want to say. Oh, well, they're looking for their safe spaces, their snowflakes. I don't know. I think if you had such a gigantic enemy and such a mission to save the world, you'd be really surprised of the American spirit. All right, well, we'll continue that discussion throughout today and also during the midday show today, starting at noon. Coming up, a couple things. Rob Hulbert's going to join us, Rob with Lanyap. Join us in the second half hour of the show. When we come back from the break, we'll be talking to Eddie Tyler, superintendent of Baldwin County Schools. Graduation numbers out. Scholarship numbers are out as well. And we'll get the details from him coming up in just a little bit. Also, your text at 343-0106, 343-0106. All right, heads up here as well. You've got a great attempt at winning the big green deal, but you have to do your part. Okay, mm-hmm. Somebody was asking earlier, I want to win on the Facebook page. Well, okay, that's cool.
Right.
I like that you like to win. But the how to win is on our Facebook page, on our website, list the participating sponsors, where you go, how you get signed up. Remember, we're going to be drawing for this coming up next month. You got to get your name in the mix. You got to go by the participating sponsors. You got to drop your name off. You could do that once per day. And, I mean, you can run the odds. The more days you drop your name off in there, the better it works for you when it comes time to pick. Don't have a statistician call me and say it makes no difference. I think more times your name is in there, better chance you have to win. Details online, fmtalk1065.com and our Facebook page. 816, we'll be right back. FM Talk 106.5 at Mobile Mornings on this Thursday. Glad to have you along. Hey, coming up, Rob Hulbert with Lanyap joins us. As I mentioned, going in the news break, joined in the studio, Superintendent of Baldwin County Schools, Eddie Tyler, to talk about some really good news out of Baldwin County Schools. Thanks for being in.
Thank you for having me.
So graduation number, this is the time, the year in review, looking back. How do graduation numbers look for Baldwin County Schools?
We're very excited about our graduation numbers this year. We've actually gone up our estimated.
Y'all were already doing pretty good.
Well, we were trending. We were trending in the right direction. I know you follow education, mm-hmm. probably have for years. And over the last 4 years, our board has invested millions of dollars to get us academically back where this Baldwin County needs to be and used to be. So our numbers, estimated graduation numbers for a system this past graduating class is 91%. And that continues to rise. Our report card grades continue to go up, you know, that the state legislature requires.
Mm-hmm.
So we're very excited about that. A lot of this has been driven by our academic dean, Dr. Woodburn, who came in several years ago and instituted a four-part plan. Our board bought into that plan, our leaders out in our schools, our teachers. And so it's all been a collaborative effort. in raising awareness academically and engaging our students. That's the main thing, putting the teachers back as a focal point of the classroom and not a device.
You know, you're doing this, though, in a situation where it's not a static number of students. Y'all are growing and growing and growing, and you're still a comp. I mean, you've got two things to work on here.
We do. Growth continues to be, I guess I could say it's a great problem, because I tell people when I go to places and talk, Baldwin County is a great place to raise a family, a quality of life, and to get a good education. Of course, Mobile County raised me and educated me. And
yeah, you went to Murphy?
Went to Murphy High School. I'll always be grateful for that in Mobile County, and I have a special place in my heart. But Baldwin County, the largest growing county in the state, and probably in the region, one of the largest in the nation, growth-wise. And the thing is that I don't think people really understand, Sean, is we're doing all this on a limited number of taxes.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, we live and die on sales tax in Baldwin County, the school system. We have a limited number of ad valorem, 12 mills as a school system, and only two of those are discretionary. The other 10 are dealing with the 10-mill match that all systems have to deal with. So what this board has embraced as far as academics has been unbelievable.
Now, where do you see, you talk about this four-part plan instituted, like what, can you give me like a layman's, I know there's probably some in-depth, but for a guy like me, help me understand that, how that's implemented, what is it?
Well, a big emphasis on reading. Naturally, you've heard all the statistics that if you aren't reading on grade level by third grade, that your problems will increase.
Yeah, finally, the legislature codified it this session.
Exactly right. So what we've done is we've got a four-part plan, and just briefly, the first is curriculum leaders. Our principals are the instructional leaders of our schools, but they get so busy with observations and other issues that come with running a school that sometimes it's hard to get in there and work with teachers. So our middle and high school have curriculum leaders that our board is invested in, and they are the liaison between the teachers and administration and with our dean of academics and making sure that the best practices are going on. Then you have guided reading. An emphasis has been on reading with Scholastic. You know, Scholastic's been around for almost 100 years,
mm-hmm.
and 92% of the schools in the country, and Scholastic partners with us with guided reading. And it's not just guided reading in your elementary and middle, it's guided reading up in our high schools, too, that we've implemented. So it's not just a top-down, it's a bottom-up that we're working on. A lot of times, too many things come from the top-down, and you miss a lot of things. So also, you have an EMITS program, and what that is, it's out of Missouri, and it's best practices. We've got teachers that come after school to get EMITS trained, and that's to get a better idea of how to be a good classroom teacher. And our board has bought into the EMITS to where now our administrators come, and they get themselves trained because they want to understand what the teachers are doing. And then we have guided reading. The last part is Scantron Analytics, and that is a program that disaggregates the data for teachers real time. We don't have to wait on the state. We don't have to wait 2 or 3 months. They can pull up real numbers on our students and how they're progressing and what areas they're weak in. It can always it'll boil down to a section of a county. You know, where that child comes from.
Really?
You know, what's going on socioeconomically in their lives. So we get an idea of what they might deal with when they go home in the afternoons and how to approach them as far as, getting them up to speed on learning the standards.
You know, it's nice that you can have real-time information to react that way. And then going back to the first thing you said, it's got to be with getting these kids bottom-up, not top-down with reading. Because I think if the kids don't have this reading skill, it's tough to teach them history. You know, it's tough to teach them science. You're going backwards instead of meeting this level and then going forward.
Well, I mean, if you can't read well, you can't really do anything well. You know, I mean, it's you'll finally find your way in life, but if you can't read well, you can't do math. Can't do
right.
Science, and those are the two big issues that we struggle with finding good teachers because there's just not enough of them. So guided reading has really elevated our test scores throughout the state. The State Department has come down to Baldwin County to find out what we're doing.
That's got to feel
that
good.
That has been so good to raise our report card scores with guided reading and in math. Now we're going to get into the guided math. We're going to start that program. So, you know, science, we're starting that. So many wonderful things. This wouldn't be possible. You got to have a board that that knows what's important. One thing is academics, that leads. Also safety. They've invested millions into our SRO program. So all, I think, these things work together. If you're a teacher and you come into a school and you feel comfortable during the day that you've got an SRO there, you don't have to worry about all the other things that, that go along with you know, discipline and somebody coming into a school, an irate parent, and those things happen. So all those things play together to lift us up academically.
Fantastic.
With you mentioned the plan you put in a few years ago, and I'm just wondering, with so many teachers and so many administrators under the one umbrella, how difficult is it to get everyone to buy in? You said they've all bought in, but is there like a central message that you guys have been pushing to all the teachers?
Well, you know, Dalton, that's a good question, because a lot of times when you get into a school as a principal, or when you get into a system as a superintendent, you're going to inherit a lot of things that have, or issues that you have to sort through. Not everybody is going to be rowing in the same direction, and that's a task. So it was a partnership. In other words, we roll this out to our teachers and our administrators. We brought them in. We showed the program to them, our Dean of Academics, Dr. Woodburn, and her curriculum team, our assistant superintendents, you know, our directors. We brought them in and started educating them about this four-part plan. They saw the benefits of guided reading. Guided reading had not been in Baldwin County. And we brought Scholastic in, and Scholastic has been a great partner. And they've seen the result. Once you see the results, then if you're still pushing back against academic improvement, then I might need to sit down with the teacher, or the principal might need to sit down with the teacher and say, what is it that concerns you when you see all the improvements and growth that's going on with our students? So I think it's just the proof's in the pudding. Mm-hmm. You know, they have to see. But also the other thing is, in education, we're so apt to change programs from year to year.
Mm-hmm.
And you can look to the State Department. You know, once they get something and they push it down to the schools throughout the state, you can bank on about maybe in 2 years or so they're going to change something. And then systems, though, invest millions of dollars into trying to get on board with what the state has asked you to do. And then all of a sudden the state comes and changes things. So what we've done has been very consistent in our academic progress.
All right. We have just a minute left here. We're talking to Eddie Tyler, superintendent of Baldwin County Schools. Scholarship numbers.
Yes, sir. Scholarship numbers. We're very excited. We're bumping $94 million last year.
Cha-ching.
We're about $10 million over last year.
Wow.
This 2019 class has really done a fantastic job. Out of those almost $94 million, about $76 million of that was academic. We have about Fairhope led the way, high school in that academically, with about $22 million in academic scholarships, athletic scholarships. Daphne High School led the way with about $11 million, and fine arts scholarships up in North Baldwin. Baldwin County High School led the way with about. I can't remember how many millions, but they led the way with fine art scholarships out of all of our high schools, which is a compliment to them. Yeah,
absolutely. Well, these are some great numbers, and I know the trend you're on. We're going to be doing this at even higher numbers next year.
Well, we are, and one of our really big stories out of this is I just came from a TV spot with our Robertsdale High School principal, Joe Sharp. He's new this year. He's been here 1 year. And they raised their graduation rate from 74% to 88%.
Wow.
In 1 year. He has brought in a tremendous culture and climate change with the students and the faculty and staff. And they bought into his vision and his personality. So we're expecting big, big things. We've got a couple of our high-performing high schools that are looking in the rearview mirror, and they're seeing Robertsdale High School.
Superintendent Tyler, thank you for your time.
Thank you for having us.
All right, be right back after the news break and Dr. Bill's forecast.
836 on FM Talk 106.5. This is Mobile Mornings. It's time to head over to McConnell Automotive and talk to Mitch McConnell. Hey, Mitch.
All right, Dalton. How are you, partner?
Hey, I am doing fantastic. Now, just pulled up McConnellAutomotive.com and looking at the front page, there are some nice-looking trucks. The first thing I see is the new 2019 GMC Sierra and also some of those Canyon models up there. Tell me, McConnellAutomotive.com, a great place to check out the inventory and the deals.
Yeah, Dalton, I mean, we're real proud of how we do it. And, you know, we've heard for years and years how many bad experiences people have had at other dealerships shopping. Just, you know, maybe being disappointed that they went on a website, checked out a price, tried to buy it at that, couldn't get it. And, you know, at McConnell Dalton, we really do it differently. I think it's the way that people are listening probably would want to sell a car if they were a dealer like I am, or maybe wanted to buy one. And so one example is we've got these trucks, Dalton, that 2019, the X31 crew cab, the truck everybody wants with the 6-inch tailgate.
Mm-hmm.
And off the real sticker price, buddy, you mean $9,531 to be exact.
Wow.
And, you know, it's just huge discounts. And nobody's got a bigger selection than us anywhere on the Gulf Coast. If you check it out from Fort Walton all the way to Mississippi, and, you know, my buddy over there in Biloxi, Bo Mandel, I joke with him. I said, buddy, I got more trucks in stock. So, you know, it's a great thing to do. Just check our website out. I want to invite everybody to do that. And we've also got some 0% on the Canyons, and we've got a 10% off a Yukon. So it's really a great summer sale, and all people have to do is, you know, come see us or check that website out. And, man, we're always willing to pay a little bit more for a trade-in than most dealerships as well. So we hope people shop with us, and I think that website's a great way to do it, buddy.
All right. Thank you, Mitch.
All right, Dalton. Y'all have a great one.
You too. That's Mitch McConnell. Go see him and the crew at McConnell Automotive. You'll find him on Dolphin Street just east of I-65.
All right. 838 FM Talk 106.5. Reminder, if you did not check the Great White video out yesterday, and we did the interview as well with David Murphy, those mm-hmm. are up on our Facebook page and our podcast page. You can go back and check it out. And yes.
You know, I'm just saying, make sure if you watch that video that you're not planning on going diving here in the next few weeks.
Yeah, get your attention, for sure. All right, it's also a Thursday. That means we check in with our buddy Rob Holbert from Land Yap. Hey, man.
What's going on, guys? Good morning.
Good morning. That's why we talk to you. We have no idea what's going on.
Until
we check in with
great
what...
white sharks and
did you see... Hey, did you see that? Did you see the video?
I did not see that video. I'm afraid to watch it. Because
it is...
You know,
it's a straight-up great white. I mean, you know, there's not a lot in that Gulf that bothers me, you know, because critters are there doing what they're supposed to do, but...
I've seen you wrestle a tiger shark down before. You have no problem with that.
but the that great white, man, it's you got to go watch the video. I want to get into
a
couple stories in the new Land Yap. What do you want us to check out?
Well, we've got, you know, I guess, Sean, I feel like this is a serial. Every week we talk about the same thing, the raises between the city raises for Mobile and the issues between the mayor and the city council. Well, so this last week it was announced that everybody got the raises. So, you know, the saga has been going on. You know, tear off your cereal box top and get your Dakota ring out. Here it is.
You know what we need to do here? Let's do this. For people that have not been following Days of Our Lives, I mean, the council and the mayor, how did the pay hike, this whole discussion is like a three-part deal, right? There was the mayor's office said they were raising salaries, and then the council said, well, no, we're raising them, and then, no, you don't get to raise them.
So back on May 14th, the city council approved a budget amendment to give cost of living, it's a 2.5% increase, so they're supposed to be. The mayor proposed a 2.5% increase for everybody, for all the city employees.
Okay.
Council comes back and says, no, we're going to amend that to just do it for what they call the merit employees, or basically most of the city workers. The non-merit employees or Section 40 employees pulled out. Those are essentially the people that are contract employees that work for the mayor's office. By and large.
So the people that are the mayor's staff, the executive branch staff, they're not going to get, the council says they're not going to get the raise. Everybody else
is.
Right. Okay.
That's right. They said, look, you guys make enough money, you're not getting the raise. You're not getting the 2.5% raise. So mayor's office comes back and says, we're going to veto the whole thing because this, you can't leave these guys out and you can't amend an amendment. They were saying that the council was amending an amendment, and they shouldn't be doing that, so they're going to veto the whole thing. Then the mayor's office goes to the personnel board and goes ahead and slides those 2,000 raises through, those raises for the merit employees. And they kind of say, well, we were always going to do that. Okay, well, that didn't sound like what we had heard before. And then last week they announced, well, we went ahead and gave all the Section 40 employees a raise, too, because we did it without having to go and ask the council for more money. So we didn't really ever have to ask them in the first place about these folks. So we found $1.3 million for the needed raises in savings that we had made from other city departments, and we just used that money, and that money was already approved. So there it is.
Yeah, so the saga
so
continues.
All these threats of vetoes and this anger and this back and forth and dueling press releases and the city clerk having her email system shut down and all those things. And at the end of the day, Sean, none of that made any difference, apparently.
It's reminiscent, in a strange way to me, of like the Cold War, right? You have this war going on that continues between the council and the mayor. Then you have battles with proxy players pop up every couple weeks, right? It's going to be this thing or that thing. There's people thrown in the lurch here on this on all sides. But in reality, it goes back to the disagreements, the failure to communicate between the council and the mayor.
Yeah, it's kind of unbelievable when you see some of this stuff, and we're getting into this era of, you know, well, I said something, but I didn't mean that. That's not what happened. And, you know, people on both sides are just saying things, you know, that in this particular issue, you know, Bess Rich is arguing that the council has the authority. And, you know, again, it goes back to this whole thing of, you know, is mediation working between these? Because now we've been doing it about 6 months. Is mediation actually working? Is it time for the judge to make a decision? I know we keep saying this over and over, and everybody tuning in on Thursdays is saying that, is this a rerun from last
year? Right, or last year.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, is this just going on and on and on? And it is going on and on, and it doesn't really make a lot of sense. But, you know, I think a lot of it, when you look at it, I think it shows the frustration level, because that the reactions are frustrated reactions. And then everybody kind of sits down and says, well, wait a minute, we don't really need to do this, this, and this, and so let's just do it this way. And but the first reactions seem to be mostly coming out of frustration.
Yeah, I don't expect, and I don't want, I would be made very uncomfortable by everybody agreeing on everything. That would worry me too. So with that being said, it does strike me though that sometimes the disagreements, I don't know what's in the hearts of men and women, but it seems like disagreements or hurdles are created because not policy, not what's right for the city, but continued brinksmanship, you know?
Right. Yeah, it is. And I think, again, it said, you know, we did a big story with them all a couple weeks ago and sat down with the mayor, sat down with a few city council people, and the level of personal frustration is pretty obvious. And I don't know that any of that is being alleviated through the mediation process.
Is there a timeline for mediation? Is there a point where you go, you've been mediating, I don't know if that's the active verb, you've been mediating on this, and it's been 6 months, it's been 9 months, this isn't working, we got to go to step two.
You know, when do Andy Capp and his wife stop going to marriage counseling? I don't know.
I went
Andy Capp and his wife on you. Yeah, that's a serious throwback right there. But you know, there's just it's the fighting every week. You know, and it's, well, we're mediating, but still, the relationship does not appear to be getting any better. Nobody seems to be coming to the table with any new skills they've learned in mediation to avoid conflict.
Right. We're waiting for the first meeting between the council.
And going on. There's nothing there. You know,
I hear what you're saying, and this is how it makes me feel. When we start hearing that, maybe we've got...
Right now, it's making me feel very angry.
Yes. Here's my box of emotions. I'm going to take out this 3x5 card. This one's called frustration.
In this box, yes.
If you're just joining us, talking to Rob Hulbert with Land Yap. By the way, nappy voting's over, right?
A nappy voting is over, and Ashley is chained to the desk and counting votes and tallying everything. And you know, it's we'll all find out, and you know, in the next month, and it'll be very exciting for everybody.
All right, so cliffhanger until then. Can you hold on through the news break?
Absolutely.
All right, coming right back, more with Rob Hulbert from Lanyap as we continue to... I mean, can you picture that? Like, there's the mayor's administration folks, executive branch, and then there's a legislative in the council, and they're like, when I hear you say that, that makes me feel...
Let him speak. Let him finish speaking.
He's in his safe space, and he's offering his true emotions or her true emotions. Y'all, I mean, I laugh so I don't cry. Coming right back. Hey, thanks, Kane. 850 FM Talk 106.5, segment of the show brought to you by Lightstream. Looking for a way to save some extra money this summer? Why not start by paying less interest on your credit card balances? Refinance with a credit card consolidation loan from Lightstream. Easy way to save hundreds or even thousands of dollars and lower your interest rate. Okay, let's talk some real numbers here. Lightstream offers credit card consolidation loans from 5.95% APR with auto pay. Lower than average credit card rate. The interest rate on credit cards is averaging around 19% APR stateside, so you can save some money right there. Absolutely no fees to get signed up here. You can even get your money as soon as the day you apply. And Lightstream believes that people with good credit deserve a better loan experience, and that's exactly what they deliver. I mean, why work on having a great credit rate ranking if you don't take advantage of it in the rate you get? So for y'all, you can also apply for a special interest rate discount. Now, the only way to get this discount is to go to lightstream.com/Sullivan, my last name. Their website, lightstream.com/Sullivan, S-U-L-L-I-V as in Victor, A-N. Subject to credit approval. Rate includes a 0.50% auto pay discount. Terms and conditions apply, and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit lightstream.com/Sullivan for more information. All right, continue our conversation with Rob Hulbert from Lanyap, and new Lanyap's out on the streets right now.
Yeah, it is. We continue our series week on sex trafficking in our area, and Lynn Oldshoe has it's a five-part series that we're doing. They won't all be on the cover, but this week is also the same cover on both sides of the bay. It's really gripping stuff, man, and it's a tough subject, but there's some really interesting information in there and stuff that people really ought to know.
I'm glad y'all are tackling it like you do, tough subjects, and Lanyap, y'all do that all the time, where the rest of us in media run to the arguments about mayors of Alabama towns whacking raccoons with shuffles.
Yeah, I mean, I think, Sean, I mean, honestly, I think it's time for us to discuss some of the bigger issues of the day. And you know, I can't quite get over this whole thing with the mayor of, Atmore, Jim Staff, beating a raccoon to death in Gulf Shores with a shovel.
And okay, so if there's like seven or eight people that haven't seen this story, so they're at the launch, they're at Orange Beach, they're going to back the boat in, a raccoon approaches his wife. It's daytime, middle of the day. We talk about this when you talk about rabid critters, right? If you see foxes and raccoons out in the middle of the day, that's suspect. Because if they're not scared of people, that's suspect. So he procures a shovel, and then the video starts rolling.
Right, and apparently beat the raccoon to death, and it became news because he was the mayor. He's the mayor of Atmore, and people are upset about the raccoon being killed. And so, it's you talk about political things you have to deal with. This is probably one when you're running for mayor, you don't think that, at some point I'm going to end up with my mayorship in the balance because of a raccoon attack.
Or
just some sort of interaction with a raccoon. I won't just say the raccoon definitely attacked him. That's what the mayor says he thought was happening.
Well, according to the citizens there in Gulf Shores, this particular raccoon would never attack anyone. They said he was a really friendly raccoon, and they would feed him. I've never seen a city unite behind one raccoon like this before.
I believe his name was Mr. Raccoon.
Rocket.
They definitely united behind the raccoon. The mayor, as an outsider coming down and bludgeoning the raccoon, did not go over very well at all.
Yeah, I mean, you could, but you could, I'll just, because I can't help it, I'll play devil's advocate here. And if you're, you know, if you've read all these stories and all these same news, you know, TV stations that are running with the raccoon story now, if they have for the last year told you that every, you know, every critter out there is rabid and they're coming for you and your they're coming for you and your children, you better put bars up on the windows. You hear that long enough and then raccoon walks out and is getting near you in the middle of the day, you might think this is a rabid raccoon.
You might, and you might have good reason to think that. I, you know, it's hard to get to be, come down too hard on the mayor, and I mean, I obviously raccoons are, you know, people like raccoons.
Yeah, it's because they're cute. Their life value. If it was a snake, then everybody they'd be cheering. I know, you know, when I put pictures up of me not killing snakes online, you know, on my Instagram or something, people freak out why I didn't kill them. I said because they're not poisonous. I have no reason to kill them. And people want them dead, but. But raccoon life is worth more.
Yeah, there are people on. I've noticed, you know, looking online at some of the comments under some news stories, there are people who want the mayor to try to fight a bear. Now they think they think that he's a sissy for taking on a raccoon, and that, you know, if he wants to attack animals, then go ahead and attack a bear. So they would like to see that. That seems like a reasonable response.
I've also heard that he's a big Mobile Bay Bears fan, not happy that they're becoming the Rocket City Trash Pandas.
Not becoming the Trash Pandas. So, yeah. he will, you know, maybe they can have a, you know, a stopover in Atmore, and he can come out and bludgeon there.
Yeah, I mean, it's at the same time, I'll flip around and say, you know, if this is a habituated raccoon, although those are the ones that often end up biting people, you're not supposed to feed wild critters, but a habituated raccoon, it's cute, it comes out because it thinks people have, you know, they're giving them snacks as they come and go from the boat launch. It's sad. People like that raccoon. I don't, you know, I don't move past that too quickly, but it has become a bigger story. I mean, you look at the number of clicks on a story like that versus a human being dying, and it seems like we're way more interested in raccoons than that. I would, you know, thinking back, there's, I don't know if it still goes on, there was a boat launch over and just getting into Louisiana on the Pearl River over in White Kitchen, Louisiana, where they used to have a wild hog that had become unwild, had become tame because people fed it, and you'd go to launch your boat and it'd be the wee hours of the morning, be over there leaving to go down the Pearl River duck hunting, and this pig would come out from the woods, jet black, you know, pig, like wild, look, you know, like wild hog. Right. And the first few times we all jumped up in the boat as the thing circled around. It was just looking for food, but it would bite you if you didn't feed it. So, I mean, if I'd had a shovel.
That would be probably a reasonable point at which to shoot a pig.
I'd have had a shovel.
Shoveling, you know, I don't, you know, there's raccoons, you know, it's that sort of hierarchy of animals. If this was a, you know, a friendly possum, nobody would care.
Nope.
You know, nobody would care. But the raccoon, he is cute. He does have opposable thumbs. He can do things that make him better than other animals. And so, I you know, he gets a lot more sympathy.
I mean, it is, that's a whole other show, how we have this hierarchy of, you put up, you could find five different animals killed stories and put them up, and depending on the species, the clicks would be very, very different.
I tell you what, you get a couple of raccoons in your attic, and they don't seem so cute.
No.
I've had that happen.
He, the mayor would have been arrested the day after if this raccoon was on a live stream about to give birth. I mean, it would be over, for him.
No doubt.
By the way, do you have any reaction to that trend that started with April, the giraffe, that now seems to be taking out? Any kind of critter you can get, I guess exotic critter, that's going to give birth is going to get you way more clicks than actually doing journalism.
Well, right, yeah. I mean, we're actually get more people to look at it than actually coming to the zoo to see the animal. Yeah, it's. You know, it's the world we live in. This is what we're going to do. We hang out and watch these things, and you know, make judgment calls about whether a raccoon is or is not rabid, or you know, whether an animal giving birth is valuable or not. It's exciting stuff.
It is, and it's probably easier to understand than the mayor and the council.
Yeah, it's easier to understand than you know, raises down at City Hall. That's boring, and we're getting tired of it.
So, there you go. You know,
I'm glad that this raccoon gate came along, and it did.
Right. Rob Holbert with Land Yap. Once again, y'all check him out online and go pick up a copy of the new Land Yap. Rob, we'll talk to you next week.
All right, guys. Have a great weekend.
You too. All right, we're out of here. Mike Gallagher Show on the way next. We'll see you again at noon today for Midday Mobile. One of the interviews coming up today, the history of air conditioning, just in time for summer.